So we're going to go ahead and get started in the meeting. Mary Ann, would you grab a seat? I'm BJ, an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
Good evening and welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9, part 2. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Katie and Matt. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, steps 8 and 9 are made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So like I said, the first reading is going to be found on page 80 if you'd like to follow along in your big book. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Matt, would you like to start?
Sure. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Matt.
My home group is Great Bridge Step Study on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock in Chesapeake. The only thing missing from this paragraph is signed Matt. You know, when I first started reading the book, I looked for things to identify with, and this is one of the first paragraphs that that I came to, and I basically said, wow, this is me. This is exactly who I am and what I'm doing. So when David called me and asked me to speak on this step, of course I read it, and I was like, oh, man, this is not what I want to do. So, which automatically told me this is exactly what I need to do. So chances that we have domestic troubles, there were no chances for me. Like I said, this was to a T of what I was doing. I was drinking incessantly, couldn't stop, had no idea what was wrong with me. It was everybody else's fault but mine. Blamed the wife, which unfortunately, fortunately, wound up in a divorce. But she lived for years and years and was worn out, resentful, and didn't speak. I lived this paragraph day by day at the end of my drinking career. And you know what else? I mean, how could she be anything but that? I never blamed her for that. I did what I wanted, whenever I wanted, and alcohol gave me the ability to do that. I didn't have to tell anybody what I was doing. I didn't owe you anything. Now keep in mind, this is the person that I committed my life to and that I was going to be honest with and faithful to, and just drinking was more important to me, having a good time and getting what I wanted and not mattering who was in the way to do it. So, and then the funny part was the secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. This should have been the clue to me that alcohol was a problem for me, because the girl who understood no longer understood. She was like, man, you got a drinking problem, you know? And of course, she didn't know anything. So, I went on with my drinking career and kind of burned everything that I could to the ground. So when I got to step 8 and 9, I was like, yeah, I get to say I'm sorry now to everybody, and this time I'm going to mean it. You know, this time it's going to be different. I get to say I'm sorry. Because I had said I'm sorry hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times before. And thank God that I had a sponsor that was like, whoa, all right, you're not even close to step 8 and 9 yet. You need to back off of that. And we'll get to it when we get to it. So, I did. I put a lot of people through a lot of stuff. And a lot of it was because of my own fears, insecurities. I was walking around with an ego, and I still can from time to time. And I didn't really care that I put all of those people through hell. So, thanks.
Thanks for sharing. My name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. I want to thank the group for having me back to finish up 8 and 9. I left out last week. I also have a home group. It's the Williamsburg 12 and 12. Meet on Wednesday nights and study the steps and the traditions out of that book. It's funny because I have my original big book here, and my sponsor told me to read through and highlight what I related to, and there's not a whole lot in this paragraph that's highlighted, but as we're reading through it and I was listening to Matt talk, I thought about, chances are we have domestic troubles. When I got sober, I was 17 years old, I was still living at home with my parents. I didn't have like an at-home sex relation to speak of, but I did have home relationships that were in complete and utter chaos. I had, my mother had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous 11 months before I had. So she was trying to figure out how to be sober after 48 years of living and most of those drinking. And then add my crazy on top of that. And, we didn't get well right away. When I did the fourth step, I really saw for the first time, the mistakes that I had made in that context, because I'd spent most of my drinking being a victim. If I had bad relationships, it's because the other people were bad and they didn't understand. And, if they had gone through what I had gone through, or if they just tried to see things my way, it's always got to be my way, we'd be fine. And, I used to say I grew up in a violent alcoholic home, and that was true. And then my sponsor pointed out to me it did not become a violent alcoholic home until I became a violent alcoholic, which happened. Actually, the violent part happened before I took my first drink. The violent alcoholic part was not far behind that. And, so our home was in chaos. And then, you know, my drinking story, when I tell it, you know, I went from elementary school to junior high school. I didn't feel like other people looked. The change in scenery magnified that. I didn't know how to handle it. And so the way that I handled that transition is how I handled my life throughout my drinking, was I got a boyfriend, and when that didn't work, I got drunk. And that you just hit repeat over and over again until the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and add like some pretty serious consequences, and that's my drinking story. And so, you know, I am so good at feeling lonely and sorry for myself. And when I sit in those things for too long, I start to behave in ways that don't match the picture of the woman I think I am in my head, you know? Especially when I was drinking. You know, I never thought I would cheat on anybody. I never, you know, I like to be the thoughtful person that, like, you know, does stuff. And I just can't, I can't do any of that when I'm drunk. I can't, you know? When I'm drunk, I like the person who's standing in front of me and paying attention to me. That may or may not be the person I'm dating. And quite frequently toward the end, it was not. You know, and I, as I said, my reaction to that when I woke up on the other side of that line over and over and over again, you know, yes, there was remorse, but immediately there was an explanation. You know, I had to make it okay because I needed to continue to drink. And so, you know, I could see that, you know, whoever I had wronged probably didn't appreciate it, but I always had an excuse. You know, if you had had the childhood that I had, if you had come from the home that I had come from, if you had had the things happen to you while you were drinking that I had had happen to me while I was drinking and in pursuit of alcohol, you would behave this way too, and you would understand. And so I always had an excuse for that stuff. And it was when I stopped drinking that the weight of that kind of all caught up. And I, you know, for a while used that to feel lonely and sorry for myself in sobriety. I remember at 9 months sober calling my sponsor saying, I'm either going to start smoking again or I'm going to call my ex-boyfriend. And she said, I think you should start smoking again. And I was flabbergasted. Like, smoking could kill you. Like, I could get cancer and die. Why would you ever suggest that I smoke cigarettes? And she goes, well, calling him is going to kill you a lot faster. And hung up on me. You know, and that was a direct result of me sitting there feeling lonely and sorry for myself about the state of my domestic relationships and the things that I had done, because I was starting to see the things that I had done to make them that way. But I still thought that if I went back and I smiled and I batted my eyelashes and I wore a cute dress that I could fix it, you know. I didn't really understand what this was about. And thank God, you know, I worked this up with my sponsor out of the book as we came to them. It took me a long time to get to page 80, 81, because we started at the front cover. So I had a little bit of a better grasp on that by the time I got here. So thanks.
Thanks, Katie.
Next reading starts on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
So, here I am. I'm a little ways into sobriety now. Been working with my sponsor, and I have removed the one way that I know how to deal with everything, and that's drinking. So, now the reality is setting in of exactly, like Katie said, I'd done my four-step. I'm looking at all of the selfish, self-righteous ways that I have and how I've just steamrolled a bunch of people, whether it's wife, parents, whomever. So now I don't have alcohol and I am like reeling in pain for what I've done and some of the actions that I've had and the selfishness. So I get here and my idea, and again, thank God for a sponsor taking me through this, because my idea is I want to feel better. That's That's what it's always about for me. I want to feel better. So my first, you know, my idea was I want to go to these people and apologize and like admit all this stuff and say that I've done all these horrible things, put them out there on the line and hurt them even worse at my own expense. That's my best thinking. That's where I am. And my sponsor thankfully stops me and we properly do this, in a way as to not, so I don't get my way, which is weird for me because I always want my way. I don't really care about your feelings. I don't really care about how I make you feel when I say the things that I want to say to you to get myself over this hump and feel better. And I really thought that's what this step was about, was, you know, getting it all out and just blah, and letting everybody have it and let them know what I've done, and then I can just feel better. I can be better. You know, and that's really not the way that it went at all. And in a lot of cases, I had to be very careful about the way that I did stuff with people because I'm being careful not to hurt those people any more than I already have. First of all, you know, looking back on it, none of them really deserved what they got from me, even though in my head I'd made up all these excuses, all these reasons of why I was able to treat those people the way that I did, people's institutions, whatever it might have been. It was always someone else besides myself that was at fault. And I just poured alcohol on it, fueled the fire, and made sure that I was doing what I wanted. So when it got to this, it was very, very frustrating for me. I like to refer to it as the noise in my head because that's what I had going on a lot, and I still get it from time to time. The noise gets very loud, and I'm not in a very good spiritual place, and I just wanted to give that to everybody. I wanted to let them know exactly what I'd done. And that's not what this is about for me, especially today. It's about realizing my actions, where I've been wrong, and trying to make those rights wrong. Making sure not to injure others in the process of that. Thanks.
Whenever I read this paragraph, I used to do this all the time when I was drunk. You know, I would feel bad about what I did, and I would just go tell the other person, you know. And I actually did the, like, well, I'm not actually going to tell you who, because I don't want that to get in the way of what I might need to do over there later. You know, it was purely selfish. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to spare you the details, because I didn't. You know, and so when I got here and it was explained to me that, like, we don't do that, I could understand why that would be the suggestion because, you know, I remember, you know, being honest, what I thought was honest at the time, which was really just hurtful, and the sound that people make when you say things like that to them is something that, for me, like, I'll never unhear. You know, and I really wish that I had handled those things differently. You know, my sponsor told me when we were talking about this, like, you don't get to go dump your garbage on people. That's your garbage. You know, I'm supposed to take my mess to her, the message to the meeting, and the amends to the person who it's owed to. You know, she explained to me that this process is not about me feeling better. This is about me going back and fixing what I have broken. And she said, you know, that the amends have two parts, and I think we'll get to the other part as we continue. But, you know, I go back, I mend what I broke, I make amend, and then I amend my behavior going forward. I don't treat people that way anymore. And that was a key difference here, where it said, we're sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. I could say I was sorry. I could not tell you that I would not do it again. I might say those words, but, you know, I can't serve two masters. When I'm drinking, I can have morals. I can have, you know, that picture in my head of the kind of girl I think I am. You know, I can have things that I would like. I didn't really have a lot of goals, but, you know, things that I wanted to be doing. And if it came down to choosing between any of that and a drink, I always chose a drink. I traded in everything that I ever cared about for alcohol, you know, and so by the time I got to the point where I was trying to do something like this while I was still drinking, you know, I didn't want to do it again, but I couldn't promise you that I wouldn't. And I kind of had a sense of that, you know. And I, you know, on this, I have to, on this stuff in particular, I have to go back and admit my fault. And my sponsor had me keep it really general. You know, she said, I didn't treat you the way you deserve to be treated. I was not a good girlfriend to you. Very simple statements. And then I got to ask them, you know, had I left anything out? You know, how has this affected you? Have I left anything out? What can I do to make it right? The focus of my conversation by the time I got to that point was on the other person and giving them an opportunity to say what they needed to say to me, and listening in a kind and loving way. And then, you know, in some cases, going to my sponsor and crying about it, you know. But my processing of, like, what this was it was not something that was done in front of the other person. That was something that I did with my sponsor before and what I in and after the amends. And you know, she was very clear with me about that. And there were certain amends that she did not allow me to make face to face. You know, she's like, you pick up the phone, you make a phone call, and you know. And I think particularly in this area of my life, I don't know that I could have been as honest and open if I thought I got to walk in, you know, look good and try to get my way, because I was still about getting my way in that area of my life, and I still can be, you know. And so I'm there to admit my fault. I'm there to do that, and I don't have any right to go further. You know, they don't need details. They were there. And I don't get to involve other people and give someone, you know, someone to vent blame or jealousy or those types of things on, because I've been on the other side of that. I've put myself on the other side of that a lot, and it's not a fun place to be. So that's all I've got on that. Thanks.
Hey, JD2. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
Signed, Matt. So here's, I ran into issue with this because now I'm not drinking anymore. Isn't everybody happy? You know, look, I've stopped. Why are there still problems? You know, I'm a good person. I'm trying to be sober, you know, and people are just looking at me and they're not believing it. You know, my kids didn't believe it. My parents didn't believe it. People that I'm friends with didn't believe it. Because that second paragraph described to a T exactly what I was like. That chaos, the pain and misery that I like to live in, where I did whatever I wanted. You know, it was all still there. Just because I quit drinking, they'd seen me stop drinking on a Friday night, and I'm never drinking again. And then next thing you know, Saturday afternoon, I'm doing it all over again. You know, I'd done this hundreds of times over and over and over, but I'm sober now. You know, that's what I kept saying. I'm not drinking anymore. And that's just not getting it. You know, I drank for a lot of years. You know, it was always about, oh, Matt had another incident, you know, and me saying I'm sorry and it's not going to happen again. You know, I won't ever let that happen again. And a couple of days later, I've convinced myself that it really wasn't that bad. I'm only going to drink beer this week, you know. I'm not going to drink any liquor anymore, and that's what the problem was. And here I was, right back in this problem. you know, I broke a lot of hearts, you know, and I remember this vividly, and I want to share this because it's something that I don't share very often, but my son actually had a sleepover, and I remember he was being a you know, 11, 12-year-old smart aleck and running his mouth, and I remember grabbing my son and shaking him in front of one of his friends and, you know, threatening his life. That's the guy that I am when I'm drinking, you know? That's the tornado and chaos that I bring to people's lives. So immediately when I took alcohol out of it, you know, it's kind of like coming out of that cellar and, you know, looking at those people and saying, but I'm better now. You know, I'm better. Look at me, you know, because this is all about me now. And, you know, the truth is it took a long time, and it's still taking time for some of those people to look at me differently than what they looked at before, to have different expectations about how I'm going to behave in situations in which they have to tell me something that's uncomfortable, where I used to blow up and you know, say nasty, nasty things to folks. You know, I had people that worked for me, which you can imagine what kind of boss I was as an alcoholic. Not a very good one. But those people, you know, it took years for me to rebuild relationships. And even at that, they still looked at me as if they're waiting for that wind to blow again, for that tornado to come through and act and be that person that I was before. And it is, I'll be honest with you, it is work sometimes. There's a lot of times that I can slip back in and feel that exact same way and want to behave like that. Because that's what I know. Chaos, yeah. Anger, you know, I want to make you the bad person and get what I want out of the situation. I can employ those at any minute in my life. Thank God for this program and sponsors and the folks in these rooms, because today I work very, very hard so that I don't have to behave like that, so that I don't have to say, well, you know what, I'm going to get a drink, because I said that for a lot of years. You know, I walked out of meetings at 10 o'clock in the morning and went and got vodka. You know, that's not who I choose to be today, and only through this program and working these steps is what's given me the opportunity to live a different way today. Thanks.
Yeah, I remember where I was when I first heard that paragraph about the tornado. I was sitting in the basement of a, you know, a clubhouse, and there was a recovery shop upstairs, and I didn't go to that meeting often, and somebody read this, and I just was like, whoa. You know, like, it was one of those paragraphs that, I mean, it's highlighted, so I must have read it before, but when I really heard it, I saw it. You know, I saw my own life and my own drinking as that tornado. You know, just, I roared through the lives of others. I'm loud, I like to be the center of attention, and I just will fight and claw my way there. You know, everyone else be damned. And you know, and I saw the broken hearts, and I saw, you know, all of the relationships, the friendships that had fallen away, the romantic relationships that were gone, you know, my family. You know, I destroyed, ripped up and tore down everything in my life. And I had a sponsor who was like, being sober is not enough. You don't get credit for doing the thing you were supposed to be doing the whole time. You know, that's not like, yes, you've got to stay sober or you don't have a chance at any of this. And so, you know, I have to do the things that have been suggested of me to stay sober. I have to have a sponsor. I have to have a home group. I have to be in the book. I have to be working with others. You know, I have to be living these principles to the best of my ability. And she's like, but you also, you know, all of the sponsors I've had have always told me, you have to be kind to people. You know, God, I hate that. It's the first thing that I forget. I'll call my sponsor now, and I'll get off on a rant or a tear about something, and she's like, you know, it really sounds to me like you just need to be kind to that person. And I cringe because I don't like that. You know, I don't want that to be the answer. But particularly with the people who were in my life before, and I'm, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I live 3,000 miles away from all of them. So we have a different kind of relationship today. There aren't people in my daily life who experienced drunk me. There are certainly people in my daily life who experienced self-will run riot me, which is a pretty good glimpse of what drunk me looked like, just not drunk. But there are a lot of people who I shockingly treated for a very long time. You know, I punished them for loving me. And, you know, I had a sponsor who told me there are some wrongs you're just never going to be able to make right. Like, there are debts I'm never going to be able to repay. Not like, you know, not as a way to beat me up, but for me, that helped me to think, like, there's not an end point here with my mother. You know, I don't get to a particular point in the road and go, okay, I'm done making my amends now. You know, like, we're even. There are things that I've said and done to that woman that I will never be able to take back. In sobriety, too. Because I did not get well right away. And, you know, that is one relationship that I have struggled with in different ways over the years. And, you know, we are people who used to throw each other downstairs. And we stopped doing that when we stopped drinking. But the anger and the rage that led to that behavior took a long time to go away. And I remember I was probably 6 or 7 years sober, and I was home, and we were going there, you know, and it's just like, it's like this magnetic force field that when one goes up, the other has to go higher. And I remember losing control and starting to yell at her and having this thing break through me and saying, I love you. I don't want to talk to you this way. Can we take a break and come back and talk about this later? That took me 7 years to say to her. I can't tell you how many other screaming matches we got in, and I just went right on down that road, you know? And this is after I made that formal amends to her, you know? These steps, you know, all of them, I believe that step one is the only step that I've ever worked perfectly. I have kicked and fought and struggled with the rest of them, and I've fallen short over and over and over again. And I've had to go back in sobriety and acknowledge the mistakes that I have made. You know, and by being willing to do that, instead of saying like, oh, I just, you know, I've made that amends, it's done, I said my piece, I let them say theirs, but being willing to acknowledge where I have fallen short of that as I've gone forward, has been a really important part of that living amends, because I'm not perfect, and I've struggled with perfectionism my entire life and well into sobriety, you know. You all can fall short, and it's okay. God's got it. It'll be good. Let it happen to me, and it is the end of the world. I'm a horrible AA. I don't belong here. I should not come back. You know, I just have a separate standard for myself. And thank God for sponsorship, because, you know, I don't want to be that tornado in somebody's life. I don't want to treat people that way. And I've seen over and over and over again that, left to my own devices, that's just how I roll, you know? And I've, you know, gone down enough paths of self-will and sobriety to see that, like, I'm capable of doing that without a drink. And that was something that I don't think I realized when I got here. I thought, if you just take the alcohol away, and I'm going to be that person I thought I was the whole time. Turns out not. you know, if I had the ability to self-will my way into being a good person, I probably wouldn't be here. You know, but it turns out my character defects don't respond to self, you know, self-will any better than my alcoholism. And so, you know, I love this paragraph because it reminds me of who I am, you know, and it tells me what I need to do to stay away from that. I need to try and make good. I need to not only go back and fix what I broke, but tell those people who are in my life, I'm not going to treat you this way anymore to the best of my ability, and admit where I've fallen short. And if, you know, I had a lot of people who weren't in my life and decided not to come back into my life after I got sober. And, you know, the way that worked for them is, I'm not going to treat the next person who fills that role in my life the way I treated you. I'm going to treat the next person better the way that you deserve to be treated. So thanks.
Thank you. Next reading is on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
So this kind of goes back to what I was saying over the last paragraphs. All right, I stopped drinking, you know, you should all accept my apology, you know, even though it's the same one that I gave you for the past 20 years, whatever it might be. And, you know, in a lot of times, you know, I went out and I did it and I made amends. And it was something different than a remorseful mumbling, but sometimes it probably sounded exactly like that to the people that I'm doing it with. And you know, and I had people tell me that it's just not good enough. You know, I can remember specifically I made amends to a person, and that person was not exactly happy with my changed life and belief that I was now a spiritual being and that I was making amends to them. And I sat for the next half hour and listened to exactly what they wanted to tell me about how I treated them and what I had done. And I did exactly as Katie said. I sat there and I listened and I took it. And you know what? Everything they said was right. Because, to be honest with you, I looked at them and I saw their character defects carefully, not to examine mine, but to take their inventory and see where they were wrong. And that was a bad place for me to be, you know, because of the character defects that they were displaying towards me and what they were giving me was exactly what I deserved. I created it. I, you know, not all of them, and I won't say that, but, you know, what the way that they were being towards me was a product of my alcoholism, my selfishness, my own determination to get what I wanted. You know, now that I'm cleaning house, you know, I'm looking for these words that are in this paragraph: patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. All the things that I don't really normally care about, to be honest with you. I mean, just honestly, that's not who I am as an alcoholic. So now I'm trying to do these things, and you know, I'm trying to be responsible, you know. I'm trying to own my wrongs and be a part of their life in a different way. And it's not always that quickly. It's and even today there's still some that people that they just have chosen not to be a part of my life, and that's okay. The spiritual life, I love that sentence in itself. The spiritual life is not a theory. And the reason that I say that is because you have to understand where I came from, which is a guy who got here who had no beliefs in anything. And if there was any kind of spiritual or higher power or anything like that, it was very angry. And I was borderline atheist. I was, you know, this and that. I had labeled myself all these things. And, you know, it took me some work, but you know, the spiritual part of this program became my way of life now. And I don't force that on anybody. I don't force it on my kids. I don't force it on my ex-wife. I don't, you know, for me, that's who I am today. And I try to be. And I would like to point out, as Katie said, I don't do this perfectly. So don't get me wrong. This does not come as, like, I'm all zen now when I walk through life and, you know, oh, you just ran my foot over with your car. Okay, it's all right. You know, no, I don't live like that. But I do. I rely on a higher power and I try to live this program in all aspects of my life, which at times can be extremely challenging. But I have found, just as the end of this paragraph, the last paragraph says, our behavior will convince them more than our words. Mm-hmm. Because my words were a whole lot of bull for a lot of years to a lot of people. No, I won't drink again. No, I won't hurt you again. No, I won't lie to you again. You know, and it's taken me a long time, and it still can, to get to the part where people can trust me, you know, because I blew that for a lot of years. You know, I'm just now to the point where I'm used to being able to leave my cell phone out or to have a phone call come in while I'm with my kids, and I don't have to be, you know, all embarrassed about it or take it in private. You know, because that's how I liked it. That's how I lived. And today, for me, getting up in the morning and saying some prayers and asking that I be patient, tolerant, kind, and loving, that's only as a result of this program. That's only as a result of completely accepting step one, working with a sponsor, going to meetings, and gaining a knowledge of what my higher power has in store for me on a daily basis, which I most definitely include, you know, staying sober for that day. So, thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, this is a big part of, you know, the long period of reconstruction, and it was a long period. You know, I had people, family members who had thrown me out of their homes, and I was not welcomed back immediately with open arms. You know, but I've had sponsors direct me to that prayer, particularly when I've struggled with family relationships, because, you know, they stick around. That I'm just, when I'm struggling with that, I'm supposed to ask, when I'm doing my morning meditation, that I be shown the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. It is hard for me to say, and it's one of those prayers that, like, be careful when you say it. because it, you know, there have been times where I've done that and it has seemed almost impossible. You know, I get lots of opportunities to practice those things. You know, and, but it's so important that I recognize that, like, this is not just about me going back and being better. Of myself, I lack the ability to do that. I really do need to remember where my source of power comes from, and particularly as I try to rebuild all these things that I broke, you know, and I recognize that I can't fix it overnight. You know, I was somebody that if I really hurt you, I'd like to go buy you something really expensive, and then it's fine. You know, I got you this really thoughtful gift, so it doesn't matter that I stole your money and deleted your taxes. you know, and I love that the spiritual life is not a theory, you know, because I have struggled with that throughout my sobriety, particularly with step 11, thinking that I have to have a belief in, you know, or a set idea or understanding or theory of a higher power in order for that power to work in my life. That's not true. What this tells me right here is theories really are of no use to me. You know, if I can find one that's comforting that allows me to access that power and feel connected to it, great. But if I don't, not a big deal. What we do here, this spiritual life, is a program of action. I have to live it. It's in italics. And my sponsor said, anything that's in italics is really important and you should underline it and pay attention to it. She also had me highlight all of the musts in my big book, because when I got sober, people were saying, there's no musts in the big book. It's all suggestions. There are a lot of musts in the big book. And one of them right here is, we must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. You know, and I put, or five, because that's about how long I drank. You know, and that I tore down people's dreams and hopes in me over and over and over again. And I acted like it wasn't a big deal. You know, and so I need to, through my behavior more than my words, with the people who are still in my life, demonstrate that I am different. Put this program into action and live it in front of them. You know, and to the best of my ability, include them in that. And like I said, I fall short of that a lot. But, you know, I can come back and I can say, you know, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And I have used that as a mantra at times in my sobriety, because, you know, it's hard for me not to criticize. It's hard for me not to argue. My sponsor had me write, we'd be very careful not to criticize them or argue, because I like to do that too. And so I need to remember where my source of power comes from, and I need to remember that this isn't about getting a certain set of beliefs or spiritual theories. This is about putting something into action that, you know, before I got here, I was completely incapable of doing. So thanks.
Thank you. Still on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So like I said, you know, there were a lot of wrongs that I had done, and it has taken some time to work through those with some people, on their time, not mine. You know, but sometimes I like I said, I don't work the program perfectly, and I get on my own terms, and I want it fixed now. I want people to say it's okay, you know. I want to feel better. I want to feel like it's fixed. And that's not always the case. And I had a hard time moving past some of those situations in which there were a lot of conversations between my sponsor and I where I'm trying to convince him that I should go back and try this again. You know? Damn it, I didn't get the result I wanted. I should go back and do it again. And oh, thank God for a sponsor. But at any rate, you know, he said it'll happen when it's supposed to happen, and if it's not supposed to happen, it won't. That's not up for you to decide that. Mm-hmm. Which is weird for me, because I want to control everything. I want to control how you feel about me. I want to control how you think about me. And if you're thinking and feeling bad things about me, then I want to fix that, because I'm a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm a good guy. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, right? I'm a good guy. And that's not the way that it is. You know, and there were some that were very, very hard for me to do. There was some stuff that I had to do that I had to postpone, some conversations, and really get my stuff together before I went and did them. And I cannot harp on this enough. That's where the strength of a good sponsor comes in. Because without my sponsor, there's no way, left to my own devices, I could have done any of this on my own. I probably would have thought I could, left to my own devices. I'm like, yeah, I got this. I'm just going to. But, you know, I don't know who this guy is, sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. You know, that's not who I was, and that's not the way that I wanted to approach this. But I did. I did. And thankfully, I did, because people were actually open in a lot of cases. There were some that, and I know nobody in here probably does this, but I can make a situation seem really big in my head, and make it seem really bad and daunting and, oh my God, it was awful. And there were some things that I had to make amends for that I thought, no way this person would ever, ever forgive me for doing what I did. And I would make an amend, and that person would say to me, what are you talking about? You know, what are you even talking about? So I'm doing my part, and you know, we just kind of went on about our conversation. But the other part to that, at the end, that last sentence to me, you know, as God's people, we stand on our feet and we don't crawl before anyone. And that was, you know, because I want you to like me. I want you to be okay with me, you know. But that didn't mean that I had to take a beating from you, and I didn't have to lay down to you and let you kick me while I was down. You know, and that was very important, and my sponsor had to point that out for me. You're making amends. You're not going in there to be a punching bag for somebody, because I had done that for a lot of years, and that's, I wanted to be the victim to you, so that way I can say, well, I did my part. I'm a good guy. Look what you did. And ultimately what it did is it came back to me being selfish again. And I'm a very, very good manipulator, and I can manipulate the situation however I want it to be. And I could get you to say and do what I wanted you to say and do, and then next thing you know, I'm crawling in front of you. So it was humbling for me to have to not be able to do that and have it pointed out to me that this is not what we're doing this for. And again, you know, thankfully through some really good friends in the program that I worked with almost daily for a long time doing my amends, you know, saying, what do I do in this situation? You know, I without the program, I'd still be out there doing what I was doing. And I can honestly say that. So for this program and these paragraphs, I'm truly grateful. Thanks.
Yeah, I still have amends from my first go around that I haven't made. And it's not because I'm not willing, you know, and that's what my sponsor told me is, you know, there are people that I can't find. There are people that I did find and who did not respond when I reached out to them to try and set up a time to meet with them. You know, and when I did those things and I was willing and I said the prayers and I had gone through what my sponsor told me, she said, okay, give it to God. You know, give it to God. You have done what you can do. And if you're supposed to make amends to that person, they will show up in your life. And some of them did, you know, but there's still a handful of them that, you know, when I got asked to do this, I sat down and looked at my list and, you know, what I'd written out for those people. And, you know, I'm still willing to do that. They just haven't shown up in my life. And, you know, the key that for me was the don't delay. Like, don't sit on this. You know, and delay for me wasn't, you know, my sponsor saying you need to, you know, maybe pray about that a little bit more because you don't sound all that willing to go and do it the way it's described in the book, you know, for whatever reason. Delay was when my sponsor said, all right, I think we're ready to go on this one. And I'm like, no, because I don't want to, because I'm afraid. You know, I'm afraid of how these people are going to react. I'm afraid of how they're going to treat me. I'm afraid of what it's going to mean for me to go and look them in the eye. You know, that's the kind of delay that it's talking about there. I don't get to pick and choose. You know, when I've done the work and the time's come, I need to take the direction and I need to go and I need to do this. And, you know, I've had sponsors tell me, you know, we're either all God's kids or none of us are. You know, and so that part of the book, I need to be sensible. I need to be tactful or sensitive, thoughtful, considerate. Humble. I need to be going there for the right reason. And if I, you know, if I've worked to get to that point with my sponsor, I am standing before one of God's kids as another one of God's kids. I get to listen to what they have to say to me about what I did from their perspective, because quite often I thought I was making amends for one thing and I found out that it was something completely different. You know, and I get to listen to how it affected them and I get to ask what I can do to make it right. But there is a difference between that, you know, and being screamed at, you know. And I had people when I first, you know, went back and made my demonstration that swore at me and hung up on me, you know. And I cried and I went to my sponsor and she's like, all right, well, you've done your part, you know. And most of them came back around later and wanted to have that honest conversation, you know. And I'm not there to fight or defend. I'm just there to make my demonstration. And when I can see my purpose and allow the other person to have their own experience, which I had never done before for them, you know, I get to stand on my own 2 feet. And one quick example I'll give of that, I went back to one of the ex-boyfriends who I so shockingly treated, and I asked what I could do to make it right, and he told me I could pay off his car. And I was like, I don't think that's what we do. I don't think that's what we're talking about. Like, I'll call my sponsor and get back to you. You know, I'm not there to, you know, be whatever it is they think I need to be. I'm there to set right the wrong. I didn't crash his car. I didn't owe him a car, you know. So thanks.
Thank you. I have a couple more minutes. I'm going to read this last paragraph, and if you guys care to share a couple minutes each.
Okay.
So page 83, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
When I first got to the program, I remember hearing this, and I remember my thoughts on this in early sobriety. And what I thought was, blah, 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 blah. This is all a bunch of junk. Little did I know that I'd be sitting here sometime later, and it couldn't be more true, and I couldn't be more grateful for that paragraph. We don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I need to remember every single day that I'm an alcoholic. I wake up and that's the first thing that I know. I'll know the word serenity and I'll know peace. I had no idea what serenity was. I had no idea what peace was. And hopefully my experience will benefit others. I can tell you that, I've seen people throughout the years now, and people that I haven't seen in a while, and they come up to me and we'll have a conversation, and they'll look at me and they'll say, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, like, what gives? You don't act like this. What's up with you? And what they mean by that is they don't recognize the behaviors in which I have now, which to me, that's kind of a win for the program, you know, because I was not a decent person to those people in the past. Serenity to me. Today I can be okay. You know, I don't have to be really great and I don't have to be really feeling low. I can be okay. And I can be peaceful in my mind. I can be quiet. I can share my experiences with other people to try to help them. And those are not things that I did on my own. Those are things that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous had given to me. Those are gifts in which people before us, people before me, have given to me, and that I try to live and pass on to other people. You know, to live in no fear of economic insecurity, you know, intuitively know how to handle situations. Those things are baffling to me because without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life looks like, bleh. You know, that's what my life looks like. But because of this program, I'm able to live this paragraph if I give it the chance and the opportunity. If I do the simple actions which I know that keep me sober on a daily basis, I'm able to achieve all of this. Not on my own free will, not on my own doing, but because I say some simple prayers, I do some simple things, and I make sure that for that day, I stay sober. And, you know, I can't do that on my own. It's a gift from the program. A gift from you, a gift from this book, and I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you. It says if we're painstaking, my sponsor told me, like, that means I take pains. You know, this was not an easy process for me. And, you know, when I was sponsored that, you know, we worked the first 9 steps and then we live on 10, 11, and 12, which the caveat there is they have all the first 9 steps in 10, 11, and 12, but that, you know, once I hit this point, I reached a state of recovery. You know, I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, just like it says I will, you know, and that's what this looks like, that I ought to be able to deal with life on life's terms just as well as someone who never had alcoholism, you know, that I'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me, that I won't be dominated by that feeling. Because it's the same thing, one feeling of uselessness and self-pity. Don't get me wrong, I can go there. I can choose to go there today if I want to, and I pay a price for it. You know, that I'm not all about me all the time, that my attitude, my outlook changes, and my fear does not drive the show. You know, and I found the thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I was looking for in the bottle, relief. You know, when I hear someone say, we will know peace, you know, that is huge to me because that's what I wanted out of alcohol. That's what I thought I'd found when I took my first drink, you know, and it got less and less and less. And, you know, I always like to say that, you know, this program works so much better than alcohol ever did for me. the problem is that alcohol works a lot faster. You know, and the last thing that I'll say about this is, you know, that we won't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it, no matter how far down the scale we've gone. We'll see how our experience can benefit others. I had things when I got here that I would have sworn to you that AA could not fix. And, you know, a couple of those, when I got to 4 and 5, I didn't have anything in my mistakes other than the fact that I had used those experiences as an excuse for my own bad behavior toward others. You know, at the time that those things had happened, I truly, and I believe this through sponsorship, had not done anything wrong. I had not put myself in that position. You know, I was a kid. And I would have told you, AA just can't fix that. And when I went through this process, I walked away from it with that, you know, at least I can be an example of how to stay sober when you've had this experience. That this thing doesn't have to be a death sentence, you know, to live and die an alcoholic death. That I can be an example of that at a minimum. And accepting that gift as a gift, instead of feeling sorry for myself about those things, opened the door for me to have, you know, at 5 years sober, an experience where, you know, I sought outside help and those things were healed in me. And I got complete and utter freedom, just like it talks about in these steps, in these promises. And I could not have done that on my own, and I would have sworn to you that AA couldn't do it when I got here. You know, and I've been sponsored to believe, don't limit God, you know. And so by being willing to do this, it put me in a position to just not only have my perspective change, my entire life has changed. I'm a different person, but I'm a whole and complete person from the inside out, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given that to me. So thanks for my sobriety.
Thank you guys so much. Please help me thank you. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. The CCAA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi. My name is Kyle, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Big Kyle.
September 1st through 4th at the Gaylord Aqualon Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, the International Conference of Young People in AA. Everyone is invited. You can register online at aacon.org, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're interested in going and having a whole bunch of workshops and events and partying all weekend with a bunch of sober folks from all over the world, please let me know after the meeting. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
My home group, North Suffolk Big Book. Tuesday nights at 7 p.m., 1885 Bridge Road. We have a speaker at the beginning of each month. This coming month, September the 6th, is Iran P., which many of you know, so come out and join us. Also, into this month, August the 28th, which is a Sunday, not our normal group night, 2 p.m. in the afternoon. There's flyers over there if you want some more information. We're doing a workshop on the traditions. Harmony, Buster H., Jake B. and Ellen B. are our speakers. And come on out and hear what they have to say and learn a little bit about the traditions.
Thank you. Anybody else? I have an announcement. This group, Simple Actions, is having a supper and a speaker Monday, September 19th. It's a potluck. Bring us if you wish at 6 p.m. At 7 p.m., Billy H. from Madison, Virginia, will be speaking for an hour. So we'd love to have each and every one of you guys if you can make it. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers. This is not to embarrass anyone, but so that we can get to know you, if there's anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety, would you raise your hand so we can welcome you?
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Tracy.
Anybody else? Alrighty. table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a book. Anything you can fold is free. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Awesome. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be up here and available at the table after we close the meeting to answer any questions. Please feel free to come up and talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted at our website, which is simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel one more time? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol at Colonial and 22nd. It's just before you get to the train tracks. And could I have a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs on page 164?
Yes, two, four, five.
Thank you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day with a man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and make your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Please join me and praise me with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Good.